This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Canterbury is a melting pot of cultures with refugees and migrants making Christchurch their new home. With new surroundings comes new opportunities and challenges. Stay tuned as Canterbury Cultures takes a closer look at their experiences.
Well, welcome everybody to the Canterbury Cultures program here today. And as you know, we do this at Plains FM where we interview guests from different cultures and those working in the sector, in the refugee and migrant and resettlement diversity sector in Christchurch. And there's been a lot of interesting guests. And today we've got Siwan Mohammadi, who's going to join us. And Siwan is somebody that I've interviewed before, and he has a lot to contribute to our community here in various ways, which he'll tell us about. And so welcome along, Siwan, to the program today, and it's lovely to have you here. Thank you for coming along.
Thank you, Patrick. It's always a pleasure to be by your side, and thank you for having me as a guest here again today. I just wanted to begin with saying Ramadan Mubarak to our Muslim brothers and sisters. If I may, I'll just say a couple of words in our language, which is Kurdish.
Sure.
From Kurdistan. Pim khosha pesha mushtiblam ka das khoshila kak pechik da kam ka aro mini da'wat kurbira wa hamisha pim khosha blam yani wa away wa ka jwela radio da gri bakhirin dastan khosh be ka jwela yama da gnu waqt man da dani wa salam he bo hamu kurdakan مخصوصا کردی ایرو کردی چوار پچکی کردستان و دستان خوش بی زور سپاس. So thank you Patrick for having me, and I just wanted to explain what I said a bit. So I just wanted to say thank you to for having me here again in our language, and also I thank all the listeners out there taking the time to listen to us and being present to listen to what we have to say. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Siwan. And may I say for myself and on behalf of listeners too, Ramadan Mubarak to you and your family and your community. Maybe in a second you could just briefly explain to listeners what exactly is Ramadan at this month. But I'd like to say too that and correct me if I'm wrong, Siwan, but I think the Kurdistan people have, I've read different amount numbers of population, but at least 30 or 40 million people in the Kurdistan culture and language who haven't actually got a state or a country, spread over four countries, I think. It's something that I know that you must feel, and many other people feel, that it would be lovely if you had your own state. But could you correct me? Is it about those numbers, Siwan?
Yes, sure. So it's around 30 to 40 million, like you said, spread over Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and Syria, and actually parts of the south of Armenia as well. So it depends on which map you look at or who you believe in.
Yes.
Basically, we were divided in the end of World War One at the fall of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. Back then, the colonial powers decided to just draw lines basically in the Middle East, and we ended up being split into four different or five different countries. Ethnically speaking, we're different in each country, but the majority would basically, rule in their way, and in the way they see fit, and they the processes, the policies, procedures, and the government level as well is basically dominated by them, to be frank. Mm-hmm. And so it and as a minority, we, you know, some of our rights are taken away, especially cultural and language. So we're not allowed to read and write in our own language in most of these countries. It's something that, you know, it's basic rights that we think we should have as a number of people, you know, in the millions. So I think it's something that everybody, as an ethnic or as a minority, should have, you know, rights to.
Thank you. And especially not just an ethnic minority, whatever the population, but especially such a large one as the Kurdish population spread so widely. It's great that you Kurdish people are struggling away with that, and I hope one day something happens in that regard. Language and culture is so important to a human being and to a family and to a whole culture of people that all the very best with that, Siwan.
Thank you.
Do you teach your children your language?
Yes. So I have three boys, 7, 4, and 3, and they're all fluent in Kurdish. So it's a good thing. I mean, we all know that it's good for their brain development, and also I don't want them to lose that side of where they came from or where I came from or the struggles that we faced to get here. And I think that's something that, maybe our younger generation, it's good if they can have that aspect, you know, of life as well, see that aspect of life, because I think it enriches them more and it doesn't take anything away from them. It gives them a bit more knowledge and a bit more understanding about, you know, the world, because the world isn't just, you know, here and now. It's a bit more broad than that.
I'd like to encourage listeners to perhaps do their own little bit of research into the whole Kurdish situation and Kurdistan and these four countries that Siwan mentioned, because I think a lot of people here don't really understand much about the Kurdish cultural language or in fact the geography even of where Kurdistan is. So maybe listeners might like to do a bit of research there. And Siwan, you know, being Ramadan, maybe you could just spend a couple of minutes just explaining to listeners exactly what Ramadan is. A lot of people know that it's a fasting holy month, but some people aren't aware of that too. But beyond just fasting and not having food, there are lots of other things too that Muslim people follow during Ramadan. Would you like to explain just a bit broader what it is?
So I'll do my best. I'm not an expert. I guess I play my part in being a Muslim as well. So I think, you know, like you said, it's a holy month for us. It's part of being Muslim. I think you know you have commitments. I'm sure you also have commitments in other religions. So and one of our commitments is fasting for a month each year, and it's basically saying that you have commitments to a higher. We say there's a God, so we it's our commitment to show God that we are listening. We realize that God exists, and this is our way of giving back. And it's been happening for generations and generations. It's something that we've always done. And it's, you know, like for me individually, it's a spiritual thing as well. I think, you know, sometimes we forget that there's a higher being than us or a higher entity and we kind of, in my opinion, that's my thought anyway, it's that we get out of our heads a bit as humans and we think we know everything or we know the answer to it all. But I think, you know, you just have to look at the recent case of, you know, whether it's natural disasters or, you know, in case of COVID or, you know, we think we have answers to everything, but really we don't until something happens. And then, so I believe in that kind of thing. I think it's just, for me as an individual, it's a spiritual thing. It's, you know, to connect to something. And I think as humans, sometimes we need to have, you know, reflect, you know, and reflect on who we are, what we believe in. It's good for us as a person, you know, to believe in something and, you know, to something that brings us back down to earth and say, okay, you know, we need to be thankful for what we have.
Thank you. Well, I think, you know, that we do need to understand in a country like New Zealand much more about our Muslim brothers and sisters and Ramadan and fasting and all of these sorts of things. And it's part of the whole journey of diversity that we learn and explore and understand. And I don't like that word tolerate. We don't tolerate other religions and cultures. We accept them, I believe, you know, because tolerance is implying that you disagree with it somehow, but you put up with it. I don't think that's the way to go. So thank you very much for your contribution in that way, and thank you for that explanation to listeners. And now we'll have a little bit of a break for a couple of minutes, and we'll return with Tuwane, our guest, to cover some other subjects in a second. Thank you. Welcome back, listeners, and as you know, our guest is Suwan Mohammadi from the Kurdistan Culture and Language, a misunderstood culture and language, I might say, by a lot of people in the world, so it's lovely to have Suwan as a guest talking about his language and culture. And I know, Suwan, that you're a member of the Multicultural Advisory Group, which was set up by the Christchurch City Council after the multicultural strategy was written. And for listeners, the multicultural strategy is the first and only such strategy in New Zealand. In fact, there's only one in Australia, in the city of Melbourne. And this multicultural advisory group is also unique to Christchurch. So thank you, Suwan, for belonging to that group. And would you like to just give us a wee outline of what it is and what it's supposed to do?
I guess you know, talking about the it's, you know, first of all, it's been one of its kind. I think it's to have such a group is you know, it's better to have it late than never. I think it's a positive thing to do, because I think, you know, in my opinion, when we talk about, multicultural advisory group, what we're trying to do is trying to help that ethnic communities fit into New Zealand. And basically, we need policies, procedures, and rules and regulations to also follow other cultures and accept other cultures into that, because I think society, and especially in New Zealand here, it's becoming more diverse day by day, and I believe the ethnic communities is the fastest growing population in New Zealand. So I think it's a good thing to have. I think we need to get to understanding of other cultures and better understand where they're coming from, their worldviews, their knowledge, their theories. And I think it's good to kind of put that into the city council, because we know the city council has it's a far-reaching organization and a government entity. So I think it's a good place to start, basically, to get that understanding going and try and fit everybody into the same boat and create acceptance, like you said, and create understanding going into the future.
And there are many ethnicities represented in that group too, aren't there?
Yes, there's quite a few, yep, which is good. I think there could be more, but maybe the table is not that big enough. So it's always good to have, different cultures. As many as we can get, I think, helps us, because each culture comes with their own knowledge, and the wisdom, and that's something it's we should accept to have on the table every time, yeah.
In addition to the Multicultural Advisory Group and including it, what do you see as challenges for our city in the field of diversity and understanding, cultural understanding?
I think there's a few. I think, it's broadly speaking, I think, the main issues that we face is institutional racism, as ethnic communities, and racism itself. I think what's happened over the past couple of years has proved that we need to open up. And I think what I see is that we need policies and procedures and regulations need to reflect the cultural needs of ethnic communities as well, and that needs to be accepted. There's a Western model, but there's also other models of, living, studying, education and things like that, well-being, health. And, if you include all of those, there's other worldviews as well that I think we should be trying to incorporate into the Western, New Zealand model to make it, more reflective of the population. And that's how I see it, basically.
Yes, I agree. When I was growing up as a young boy in Christchurch, there are very few ethnicities here living here. Now there's over 180, according to the census. So we're certainly on a journey of multi-ethnic diversity here. And Siwan, I also know that you've done some very good work in the field of assisting with poverty and hunger, and through the Ethnic Food Bank. Would you like to explain, please, to listeners what that Ethnic Food Bank is and what your role is?
Sure. So I'm a cultural support worker. I do a couple other roles as well. But specifically for that, I'm a cultural support worker with the Cold, for the Cold communities. What we do at Oak Development Trust is we've been given funding for 2 to 3 years to basically help those in need, especially the migrants and the migrant community, those who come on work visas or student visas and try to, make New Zealand home. And we basically, because they are the main, mainly this population doesn't have access to work and income or any benefits. So I believe this funding is the first of its kind by the government in New Zealand. And it's good. I mean, this is a population that I believe, it's been left out for a very long time, because we talk about mental health needing funding. We talk about education sector needing funding. We talk about housing needing funding. I understand all of these things need funding, but we also need to understand there's a, very large population that's been basically off the radar and doesn't receive any funding like any other entity. And I think that's a area that we need to develop and support more, because there are families who come here, came on work visa, and then after COVID they've lost their job and they've had less hours as a result. Some of them might have savings or they're dependent on their income, but what happens when that runs out? So we deal with people like that. Mm. And we also deal with people who are on student visas
And I believe that uniquely also, you try and give these ethnic communities or families or individuals the food that is relevant to their culture, if possible.
Yeah, sure. So we've got an account open with Halal Butcher on Lincoln Road, and Yogi G's on just off Blenheim Road, Indian supermarket, and we do Crazy Dave's as well on Blenheim Road. So we've got a couple of options. If they're Muslim, they'll go to the Halal. If they're Indian, they'll or any Asian country, they've basically got options to have things that is food that specifically. Mm. Reflects their culture. So that's the other aspect of it.
Great. And maybe just you mentioned halal food, and maybe listeners might be interested if they're not sure about what is halal food. Could you briefly explain what is halal food? What does halal mean in a sense? It's to do with being respectful to Allah, to God, about the killing of an animal and things like that. So could you expand on that a wee bit, Siwan?
Sure. So it's we believe in that the animal should be I believe it should be killed and then waiting for the blood to drain completely before you can I think it's either I'm not sure exactly how long. It's around maybe 24 hours or something before you can actually start eating the animal, and it's when the basically the animal is killed, it's got to be facing Mecca as well. So that's
very interesting. And I believe that the halal butcher on Lincoln Road is actually somebody from your culture. It's a Kurdish butcher,
yep,
isn't it?
They're from Kurdistan. Yes, sure. Yep.
Yes. Oh, fantastic! And I think the halal. There's two or three halal restaurants around the place, and I think one opened again last week in Christchurch, I think.
I think so, yes.
A restaurant called Saffron. And so it's very good that these things can occur as well, that the people are representing their culture via food and restaurants and things like this. So, thank you very much for your contribution to all of this, Siwan, and your family. And we look forward to, all the work that you're doing in the multicultural diversity space. And, of course, your own work. Just briefly say, you've got your own study and work and all of that you've done as well. So you're finding time for everything.
Yeah. It's good. It's an area that needs to be supported, and I'm happy to give my time and give back to New Zealand. I think it's I see it as a duty for the kindness we received when we came here as refugees many years ago. So it's always good to give back to our country, our society, and it's a pleasure to create understanding and
Thank you very much. We're about to conclude, but I must say, just for listeners' benefit, that I have been present at meetings where Siwan has been a participant, and I must congratulate you, Siwan, on your understanding of Te Reo Māori, because it's such a lovely example of being multicultural, and especially with regard to the tangata whenua, as a treaty partner in New Zealand, that you have taken the time to learn mihi in Te Reo Māori, and not only learn the words, but your pronunciation is like a fluent Māori speaker almost.
I don't know about that, Patrick.
It's amazing, but it really is a joy that you do that, and I'm sure that people present.
I have to thank my tutors for that at ARA, here at ARA. I finished my degree last year in social work, so I thank my tutors for that. It couldn't have been done without them, and their focus on te reo and integrating the treaty and Maori knowledge and worldview into that program is you know, I think it's basically something that's be that should be more widespread and done all over institutions. And I think that's one thing that R is working really well at doing. Thank you.
Well, fantastic. And thanks for your lovely words today, Suwan, and all the very best to you during the month of Ramadan.
Thank you.
And your wife and children and your community and everything that you do in our city. Thank you. And Ramadan Mubarak.
Thank you, Patrick.
Okie dokie. Cheers. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, listeners. Cheers. Bye-bye.